Welcome to a series of netcasts brought to you by Yale University.
During the spring of 2012, two members of the Community and Economic Development Clinic at Yale Law School, Elizabeth Kelly and Hannah Ruth Gustafson, traveled to Brazil to research innovations in urban planning and transportation. The following is an interview they conducted with Maria Teresa Denes of the Sao Paulo Municipal Housing Secretariat. Ms. Denes has played a key role in Sao Paulo's internationally recognized data-driven efforts to systematically upgrade existing slums and legitimize land tenure citywide. Although Sao Paulo is Brazil's wealthiest and most populous city, one-third of residents live in favelas, slums, and informal land subdivisions. These residents live precariously, physically isolated from surrounding communities, and are often unable to participate in the city economy. The city's efforts to upgrade the slums and regularize land tenure are therefore important prerequisites to achieving its broader goals of combating poverty, promoting economic growth, and integrating previously isolated slums into the urban fabric. In the following interview, Ms. Denes details Sao Paulo's efforts and the ingredients of its success.
Well, I've been participating in a really big project here while we're restructuring all the housing policies and the tools for administrating all this. And the first thing we did was to organize the housing plan. We had a draft of a housing plan, but it wasn't approved or anything. So we started studying the demand. We had a contract with the Cities Alliance for working with the housing plan. The works in progress, we kept them in progress. We didn't stop anything that was going on, of course, but in the same time we started organizing the housing plan. So the internal team went on site and studied each and every precarious settlements of the city. Okay. We had a database that was from 1988 that had never been updated. So the technicians from the municipality, from the CEHAB, they went on site to check if the settlements were still there, if they had grown, or if they had been demolished or transformed into housing projects or something like that, or maybe they had grew and conurbated with others. So we had to redraw on maps the entire city about the precarious settlements. And we divide them, the categories that we have are, we have the slums, which we call them favelas. Mm-hmm. Then we have the irregular subdivisions. And we have the tenement houses. Mm-hmm. And we also have the irregular housing projects. The ones that have been built a long time ago, they still haven't been regularized, land tenure and all that, and still haven't been commercialized, so people don't have the final titles yet. So we have that as a heritage here inside TAB. So after we knew what the demand was, we also studied some, we hired some special consultancies, for example, one in 2008 with Fundação SEAD about the profile of the families who live in precarious settlements. So we drew all the houses and we defined the densities of the precarious settlements, and then people went on site to find out about their income, the size of the families, the time of occupancy. So a whole bunch of items that deal with socioeconomic issues from the families. So we have all the information from the entire city. And we also hired some studies on the deficit, because we separate the inadequacy of housing from deficit. Yes. Because people tend to put everything in the same basket. Absolutely. And it's different. Mm-hmm. So for the precarious settlements, we usually have inadequacy of households. Mm-hmm. So some households have to be removed and the families have to be resettled, so that's inadequacy. Right. And families who don't have where to live, that would be the deficit. Yeah. Okay. And we also have income brackets that we propose to work with. So from 0 to 3 minimum wages per month, that would be the ideal client, so the people who need the most the help of the government, and then from 4 to 6, and then 7 to 10.
Okay.
And then from 7 to 10, there's no subsidy proposed, because these people can buy their houses from the market. So there are other propositions for them. So so after we knew the demand, we also projected how much families were growing. So the situation in 2009, and also the situation at the end of the plan period, which is 2024,
mm-hmm.
so 16 years of plan. And so how much that would grow, and how many housing mm-hmm. projects we had to build until the end. And that's how the plan is structured. And then we defined the programs that we were going to work with. Let me get a couple of publications to help
you.
Me show some
great,
images.
You.
This is the contract with the Cities Alliance. You might find this one based on technical decisions. So the system was the sequence was classification. So we would classify if it were a slum or irregular subdivision, and where it was located in the city, because we have a big area in the south of São Paulo with two water reservoirs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Belins and Guarapiranga have different necessities,
yes,
because
sure.
of the water, of course, provision. And then there was eligibility, so to which program it would be eligible to. So if it was an area that was already upgraded but had no land tenure regularization, you would go to the land tenure regularization program. If
sure.
it were a slum outside water source region, it would go to the regular slum upgrading program,
okay.
or in the water source program.
Mm-hmm.
So that was eligibility. And then the priority.
Okay.
So we analyzed four items. The first one was infrastructure. So we would analyze the percentage of infrastructure each settlement has,
okay.
and we have all that in the system. So the system does that automatically. And then we analyzed the risk, geotechnical risk, if the mudslides or
sure.
Floods and things like that. And how the percentage of the area that the settlement occupies that is defined as risk. And then we have four categories of risk. Medium, low, high, very high.
Mm-hmm.
Then social vulnerability and health indicators, because these are usually related to sanitary installations
yeah.
and things like that. And then we would give different weight to these items. So for example, if the settlement has no pavement, it's not as bad as having no sewage, for
right.
example. So, you give different weight on these, and then you have a number, an index of prioritization of each settlement. So we had this number for each and every settlement, but they were all over the city.
Right.
And then we realized we had to group them somehow, so that we were not going to be working
mm-hmm.
all over the city
mm-hmm.
in a not very good logistic way, and also because of the sanitation reasons, we had to work on the water basin. So we decided to create this new layer of analysis that was the water basins. So we have a new map of the city that spreads outside São Paulo political limits. A next step was creating we were creating the housing plan, we had to create the sanitation plan.
Mm-hmm.
And this is completely integrated with the housing plan. So all the interventions are also crossed with the sanitation
mm-hmm.
interventions, for especially for making universal access to water and sewage in the city. It's almost universal in the formal area, but not so much in the informal area. So we wanted to reach that until 2024 as well. And then we planned the human resources and financial resources along the year. So what's the budget for each year? How much can we tackle? And how are we going to divide these priorities
mm-hmm.
and the sequence of interventions? So we always work from the upper part of the water basins towards the lower part, because
yeah.
then you sanitize and you start fixing the problem, right? Mm, the sanitation problem. And then the last thing was analyzing other public programs. So what are the other works from other secretariats that also have intervention in slums, precarious settlements that need to remove some families as well, that usually come as an emergency. So the other secretariat needs to do a canal here and you have to remove 200 families. Where am I going to put these families? They're not in my program. They're not my priority.
Yeah.
So we also learn from them and try to house their necessities. It's well, of course, not all, but a little bit of their necessities as well. So this was the housing plan. And then, how can I say? Like an annex of the housing plan, we created a group of design here in the So we're responsible for going back and updating these guidelines. Of course, we've also learned a lot from since then, right. Since 1997, I think it was the last version of this guideline.
Okay.
And so we're doing that now. We did our first design competition. So we hired 17 contracts mm-hmm. now for design. It was called Renova SP. It's this... the competition, and so, and Martha was a member of the jury. I'll show you a map. So this was the next priorities in the city. So we chose 22 areas that were the next priorities according to the plan, and then we hired design for these areas. But five areas had no winners. The ideas proposed didn't follow the necessity, so they didn't give them to anyone. So we're going to do another competition now for those. And so people establish ideas, and this is in this new idea that you do an urban plan for the perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you do design for the work, the necessity inside the precarious settlements. And then you group slums, you group housing projects that are inside the perimeter that need to be refurbished, for example, and the subdivisions as well. So you work on the territory and not in slums. But
that
you,
makes sense.
As a
good hold.
Yes, yes. So this is the first time we do something like this. So we have an urban plan for not only for the informal area, but also for the formal area around it. And then you have design for work, work design, for construction design, construction documents for the sites themselves, and also for housing projects for the settlements. So we don't build the housing projects like extra housing units here. We only build the number of housing units for the settlements that we have on these.
Okay.
There's another department in the municipality called COABI, which is responsible for building extra housing units for people who are on the list for deficit, and not for inadequacy. So we only tackle inadequacy in these projects here.
So you said that you do a plan for both the formal and the informal areas.
Mm-hmm.
How do you? What efforts are there to integrate the informal areas into sort of the broader urban fabric? Transit or streets?
Everything. Everything. So we open access to some mobility, not only inside, but mobility towards the outside. We have meetings with the transportation department, with the environmental department, with all the infrastructure, so everything. It's the guidelines are usually 100% of infrastructure and public services, so not only water and sewage and drainage, but also waste collection, access to ambulances or police or whatever are the necessary public services, and transportation is one of them, of course. Elimination of risk areas, the creation of public space, not only streets but also small plazas,
open space. Open
space.
I know that's
space.
Been a priority.
Yeah. It's one of our favorite subjects, and housing projects as well for resettlement.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we usually try to maintain the families on the same site, or resettle them as close as possible. And of course, if it's an area, it's a contaminated area, and then you can't well, keep them on, or if it's a risk area, you can't keep them on the same place, but then you try to not move them very far, because you break all the social network. And then, and there's also some studies that we've been doing now with the satisfaction of the families with our designs. So we hired this company called Data Popular. I don't know if you've heard of them. They're very good. They're specialized on studies on what we call in Brazil the classes C, D, and E, mm-hmm. which are the poorest social classes, economical classes. And so they're gonna do questionnaires on housing projects, but also on public spaces that we've built recently, in order to learn if the projects are going well, or if we've changed anything, and maybe that would become one of our guidelines, the new guidelines for design. Because, well, of course, all of us, we have a lot of experience, but it's not scientific experience in that, in that sense. Because some guidelines come from like a social worker who said people don't like this, but it wasn't collected in a scientific way, you know. So we wanna break some myth, that some things that we think are myth, and and while we learn other things, that of course there will be surprises for us as well, I'm sure. So this is starting now. And we also have another contract with a consultancy from Spain. They're called José María Montaner and Zaida Mushi. They're from Barcelona, and they have a master in housing there. And they created an evaluation system for housing project in Spain, which is very good. They were hired from the Ministry of Vivienda in Spain. And they're creating, helping us create an evaluation system for our project as well. So it's been a good experience.
Key to Sao Paulo slum upgrading is the regularization of land tenure. At present, 3,448,234 people live in informal settlements. Moreover, informal occupation of land on outskirts of the city and close-in areas designated as environmentally precarious is on the rise. The official subdivision of these plots and the issuance of concession titles are necessary both to enable the city to efficiently direct resources, environmental cleanup, sewer installation, housing improvements, etc., needed to improve quality of life and to allow residents to improve their financial position by building equity in their homes. Here, Ms. Dennis addresses the tools Brazilian law provides for land regularization and how the city has utilized them.
We have many different tools, urban tools for titling in Brazil. It all started with, well, as you mentioned, the statute of the city, and so we use all the tools we have. For example, in Paraisópolis, which is the one of the areas, big areas here, and I'm the coordinator for the upgrading program there. It's a private area that's been occupied since the 60s, mainly the 70s. So people occupied lots that are 10 by 50. And private lots, and they already have the right to use the uso capião because they've been living there for over 5 years in urban area.
First possession. Right.
Yeah, but it's a very expensive process. It's you have to go to court. It's a lawsuit, and you have to go to court, and it takes forever. It takes at least 10 years. So we're not going to use uso capião in Paraisópolis. Only a few people have entered the court asking for the right of, it's actually right of property, not only possession in this case. But we created two specific legislation for Paraisópolis. One is for owners, original owners of the lots who had stopped paying for their taxes, so they can donate the lot to the municipality in exchange of the being forgiven for their debts. And the other one is for whoever doesn't have debts and still wants to donate. They could have a transfer of rights of construction. How do you call that?
Building rights?
Yeah, building rights. So they can transfer to other areas of the cities that could be densified. So they get a certificate that they can sell on the market or use if they're building anything anywhere in the city. So it has a well a financial value if they want. So we've been receiving some areas, and when the areas are empty, we use it for building housing projects for resettlement.
Right.
And when the areas are occupied, we give them to make it easier on the process of titling. We're going to work block by block.
Okay.
Because it's very difficult to work as a whole, and it's huge,
sure.
Right?
Sure.
So we're going to identify each dweller who lives in each lot, small lot, the lot de facto, right?
Sure.
And we're going to cross with the original owners.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to use three different systems of regularization. So we have, the first one we have is for public areas. So we're going to use the CDRU from the Medida Provisoria. It's a concession of right of concession of use, special use for housing purposes.
Is that from the statute of the city as well?
It's a provisory measure called 2200. Different legislation. And we also have the concession of the right of use, which is from the statute of the city. And there's a decree, a special decree for that. So this is when the area is public. So you give them a title. Which it has, it's a title that they can sell, they can transfer to their inheritance, everything. It's not a property title, it's a possession title, but it has the same benefits as a property title. Just as strong in a juridical means. So for this is for the areas that became public. For the areas that are mixed or that are completely private, then we're going to use another law that is called demarcação urbanística. Have you heard of this one? This one is new. It's better than uso capião because it's like uso capião, but you don't have to go to court. It's administrative.
Okay.
So this is new. So then what we do is you after the works are done, only after the works are done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's very important that you don't do this beforehand.
Okay.
The title. So after the work's done, everybody has infrastructure, you open the alleys you need, or the staircases, everything. So you've defined what's public and private in this new upgrading program. Then you define the lots, and we try to make the lots as individual as possible. Sometimes it's not possible to create individual lots because people are on top of each other. So on the projection on the soil, they occupy the same lot. So then it's like condominium in this case, but we avoid that. The first thing is you draw like a little map showing what's private and what's public, like the alleys, this is public.
Okay.
Then you identify the changes. So you go there and you see this is number 14, ABC, because there are three families. Three different households on this projection. Well, this is AB, it's only A, and you define who lives where. And then you make the individual lots, the drawing of the individual lots, and then you make the map of the public areas. And then you create a new parceling of the soil. And then you go to the notary public and you enter that. So this is the new parcel. And then you wait for 5 years. If nobody complains, if the original owners don't complain, it's automatically theirs.
Okay.
If somebody complains, then for this specific lot who complained, then you go to court. And then you go like uso capião.
Okay.
But usually the original owners didn't even know that this is happening because they stopped looking and it's published in newspapers, but nobody looks. So it's very rare that somebody will complain in these cases. And so this is a new law in Brazil. It's from I think 2011. It's very new. And It's been a huge discussion because people don't agree with it. They think it's not constitutional, it's right of ownership, blah, blah, blah. But it's a law, and it's working. So.
Interesting. What did the law was called?
It's called it's the law from Minha Casa Minha Vida.
Oh, okay.
It had been discussed for a long time to start this law, and then somehow they put it in the Minha Casa Minha Vida legislation. It was not supposed to be in that law, but it passed with it.
That's
it's
great.
Weird, yeah. But
it
it's good.
States,
yeah, it's good that it's been approved. But if you look up demarcação urbanística. Mm-hmm. On Google, great. You're going to find it.
So if someone, so now you said that it takes about 10 years to get, to litigate mm-hmm. in courts and mm-hmm. get our adverse possession, let's say that there was, I don't know, a development project or something, and the owners wanted to relocate all these people who've been living there for more than 5 years. Mm-hmm. Because they hadn't gone to court, what rights would they have? How would that play out? Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, right now we have an upgrading project there,
right.
So it brings them more rights.
Okay.
And we had the two legislation that allows the owners to donate to the city.
Right.
So it's very rare that somebody who owns one specific lot inside here will actually win such a lawsuit. We call it reintegração de posse.
Sure.
It's like trying to reintegrate the possession. I don't know how they call that in English, but.
And even if it was outside of an upgrading area, I mean, would that change the odds of winning?
No. Well, usually, people if the person enters an usucapião lawsuit, they will win.
Okay.
If they have a good lawyer, they will always win.
Okay.
But if the owner enters the lawsuit asking for their land back, it really depends on the judge.
Okay.
And if the person hasn't entered with the usucapião first, then they might lose.
Okay.
Because they had the right, but they didn't enter.
Got it. Okay.
It's not automatic. You have to enter the lawsuit.
Okay.
So this is sometimes we have that problem. We're having
sure.
a problem like that now in Jardim Colombo, which is this community over here.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lawsuit from 1999 or something like that. Then the dwellers lost.
Got it.
Now.
Okay.
And we didn't know it existed. If they had told us that they were
right.
facing that, we would have helped them throughout the process to show they have the right.
Sure.
But now the process is over.
No.
So then the police went there last week. They want to expel them, eviction, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And if the suit... It's finished,
it's
and you can't really
right,
no. defend
it's
them
much,
anymore.
Right.
So, sometimes it's hard.
The Strategic Master Plan of Sao Paulo, approved in 2002, provides for Zones of Special Interest, or ZAIS. In these designated areas, the city has special authority to take steps to curb the costs of land in order to allow for the production of social housing. Here, Ms. Dennis discusses how the city's affordable housing plan works in tandem with the existing ZAIS.
It's completely integrated.
Okay.
We have all the, and it's in the ABISPI. It's one of the mm-hmm. most important layers in the ABISPI because
okay.
you have a map with space or a little housing Google.
Yes.
Have a map that you can click and turn on and off the many layers.
Okay.
And the ZAIS is
okay.
one of the.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. So these are, for example, this is the layer for slums and subdivisions and cochitos,
okay.
which is the tenement houses in downtown.
Right.
And they're not the same layer of the ZAIS, but you can click on the ZAIS and
okay.
it will open as well. And well, we have analyzed after we did the ABISPI,
mm-hmm.
we crisscrossed with the ZAIS layer,
okay.
which was from the 2004 legislation. And it doesn't match.
Okay.
Because the ZAIS, they were defined in 2000 and then a little bit changed in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
But they used maps from 2000.
Okay.
They only use area views. They didn't use any database for real occupation. So there are a lot of mistakes on the ZAIS in the legislation. So we proposed the revision of the ZAIS. But this hasn't passed yet. It has to go It has to be a change of the master plan, because the Zays were defined by the master plan. So you have to change the master plan. It's not easy. So we've been waiting for that. So what happens is, sometimes if you have a slum that has been occupying an area for over 20 years and it's not a Zays, it makes it a little bit more difficult to approve some exceptions on design and works, and especially if it's in the water source region. Usually they weren't, most of the Zays that weren't marked as Zays, it was on purpose.
Okay.
It's because people wanted to expel the dwellers.
So the Zays, it wasn't created by the Statute of the Sea. There were some cities in Brazil who had Zays before the Statute of the Sea.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, for example, Belo Horizonte already had since 1996 or something like that, in other cities in Brazil. But the statute tried to make it as a, put it as an instrument that all cities should have in Brazil.
Okay.
So, but it's a faculty, so people can choose if they want to have Zays in their master plan or not.
Okay.
So cities, because not every city has precarious settlements like this, so it shouldn't be like an obligation for the cities. And São Paulo chose to incorporate it in its master plan, which is good. And it has four types of Zays. So the Zays 1 is the Zays that is occupied by precarious settlements. Zays 2 is like empty areas for resettlement. Zays 3 is like areas in downtown with empty buildings that should be restructured for housing or for other like areas that are not very dense, that should be densified or something like that. And then the Zays 4 are the Zays in the water source region. So each of them has some differences in parameters, urban parameters. For example, the coefficient of how much you can densify, or that some differences, small differences. For example, in the Zays in 4, you can only build one time the area of your lot. In the Zays 1, you can 2.5, so you can densify a little more. So some differences.
São Paulo's slum revitalization and land regularization initiatives represent a comprehensive step in its effort to universalize housing and fulfill Brazil's constitutional guarantee of a right to adequate housing for all its citizens. Municipalities worldwide can learn from its data-driven approach, its integration of housing production, urban planning, and environmental remediation, and most importantly, its full-throated commitment to improving the lives of all its citizens.